The First Holocaust. 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. We all know that, don't we? But how do we know? And for how long have we known about it? The following presentation is based on the book The First Holocaust by Don Hedesheimer, which deals with the surprising origin of the 6 million figure. This book is volume 6 of the series Holocaust Handbooks, a steadily growing series of groundbreaking research into the biggest taboo of our modern society. It was first published in 2003 by Castle Hill Publishers and is currently available in its third edition of 2015. This presentation is divided into three parts. Part 1 tries to find the answer to the question, since when has the whole world known that 6 million died in the Holocaust? Historians usually refer to the Allied post-war tribunals at Nuremberg as the origin of the claim that 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazis during World War II. Here, we trace back that symbolic number, starting with the Nuremberg trials in 1946 and going back in time to Hitler's rise to power in 1933. In the second part, we make a big leap back in time to the first time that the 6 million figure was used, and then we will go through a large amount of media reports claiming that Jews were suffering in Eastern Europe prior to, during, and after the First World War. Yes, the first, not the second. During the third and final part, I will give an overview on the appearance of the 6 million figure in the mass media throughout more than a century, and after summarizing our topic, I will briefly discuss what this all means. First, let's see what we are told by the experts as to why we know that 6 million died. When we dig into the matter, the surprising result is that for a long time after the Second World War, expert historians on this topic have stated that we actually don't really know at all. For instance, when asked during a trial in Germany in 1979, German mainstream historian Dr. Martin Brosut, who at the time was one of the worldwide leading historians in the Third Reich studies, stated that the 6 million figure was more of a symbolic figure rather than one that has been substantiated with solid demographic research. In fact, it took until the early 1990s for mainstream Holocaust historians to publish a study that claims to thoroughly investigate the question of how many Jews fell victim to the Holocaust. Its title translates as Dimension of Genocide. It was written under the aegis of Dr. Wolfgang Benz, who at that time was a German professor for studies on anti-Semitism, of all things. The book has never been translated into any other language. As a matter of fact, this book was the reaction to a 1983 revisionist study that had challenged the accuracy of the 6 million figure. The cover image of its current edition is shown here to the right. In their attempt to refute that evil revisionist study, Benz and his colleagues got lucky because their research confirmed what has always been known. He wraps it up on page 17 of this book, where he states, "The bottom line indicates a minimum of 5.29 and a maximum of just over 6 million Jewish victims of the Holocaust." In an attempt to quell any skepticism about this lucky find, Benz asserts 3 pages later, "Of course the purpose of this project also was not to prove any preset figure, 6 million. Such an uncalled-for disclaimer might make skeptical minds suspicious, but we won't analyze this any deeper here." It is usually assumed that the Nuremberg Military Tribunal during 1945 and 1946 was the origin of the claim that 6 million fell victim to the Holocaust, and in fact, during that trial, 2 witnesses made claims to that end. First, we have Wilhelm Hittel, shown to the right. Hittel was a German Secret Service agent whose written affidavit was submitted to the court. It can be found on page 85, following in volume 31 of the published trial transcript. The affidavit is in German, and its decisive passage says, I translate, "Eichmann told me that in the various extermination camps, some 4 million Jews have been killed, while 2 more million perished in other ways." In his 1997 autobiography, the cover of which is shown to the right, Hiddle confirmed to have heard those numbers from Eichmann. The second Nuremberg witness was Dieter Wislitzeni. He is the fellow I have marked with a red arrow in the picture. During the war, he was a German official working for Adolf Eichmann at the task of deporting Jews. He testified in person during the Nuremberg trial. His testimony can be found in Volume 4 of the IMT documentation, and the passage of interest here can be found on page 371, where it states, he, Adolf Eichmann, said he would leap laughing into the grave because the feeling that he had 5 million people on his conscience would be for him a source of extraordinary satisfaction. Note that Wislitzeni falls 1 million short of the required 6 million. Since Eichmann was on the run after the war, it has been speculated that he was used as a convenient scapegoat during the Nuremberg trials, but Eichmann ended up before his own trial some 15 years later, after he had been kidnapped by Mossad agents from his Argentine refuge in 1961. Interestingly, when he was asked during that trial whether the Jews he had deported knew what was awaiting them, he made some rather astonishing remarks. That trial was actually taped, and that footage is online on YouTube and elsewhere. Let's listen to this interesting passage.
Deported Jews.
Die Leute draußen, die haben das lange nicht gewusst. Ich selber wusste es ja auch nicht, ob diese Transporte, zum Beispiel, wenn sie ins Generalgouvernement fuhren, dann wusste ich, dass ihnen überhaupt nichts passierte, solange Globoschnitt nicht gearbeitet hatte. Fuhren sie nach Auschwitz, so ist es ja klar, dass hier das Gros in die Arbeit überführt wurde. Auch mich hat man im Unklaren gelassen, wie viel oder wer etwa getötet wird. Ich habe mich allerdings auch nicht darum gekümmert, denn es ist nicht mein Aufgabenbereich gewesen. Es lässt sich nicht leugnen, dass ich durch die Tatsache meiner befohlenen Reisen nach dem Osten von den Sachen gewusst habe.
Altes Thema, schweifen
Sie nicht. Stick to the subject.
Now, most of us don't understand what he says, as it is German, but there's a twist to it. If you listen to that trial footage, you realize that whenever there is a language problem between Eichmann and the judge or the prosecutor, they all switch over to flawless, accent-free German. Like the defendant, both the chief prosecutor and the presiding judge were Germans. So this was a trial among Germans, one of whom had once assisted in the persecution of his fellow countrymen. Anyway, here is my translation of what Eichmann just said. Quote, the people out there did not know that for a long time. I myself didn't know either whether these transports, for instance, if they went into the general government, occupied Poland, then I knew that nothing happened to them as long as Glawocznik was not working there. If they went to Auschwitz, it is very clear that the majority was deployed for labor there. I was kept in the dark as well, how many or who would be killed, but I did not worry about that either, because that was not my area of responsibilities. It cannot be denied, though, that I knew about the things due to the service trips I was ordered to make to the East. Interestingly, a little after the scene we've just seen, Eichmann mentions that he has learned about some aspects of the Holocaust by reading Gerald Rettlinger's book, The Final Solution, which makes me think that his own recollections and thus his testimony might have been polluted by what he's learned after the war. But again, we won't go there because that would lead us too far astray. When we look deeper into the matter, however, a slightly different image appears. When doing research for his book Nuremberg, The Last Battle, controversial British historian David Irving rummaged through many archives and personal records of people involved in those trials. He found out that in June 1945, before the trial began, the man who was organizing it, U.S. Chief Prosecutor Robert Jackson, met three lawyers representing major influential Jewish organizations. Jackson wanted to get their input for the upcoming trial. Regarding Jewish population losses, Jackson asked them straightforward, "How great were those Jewish losses?" One of those lawyers, Dr. Robinson, responded spontaneously, 6 million. But how could he have known this? The mystery deepens as we go back in time. Already in December of 1944, when the Allied armies were about to enter Germany, the Soviet propagandist Ilya Ehrenberg wrote in the Soviet's English language newspaper Soviet War News, as reproduced here. In regions they seized, the Germans killed all the Jews, from the old folk to infants in arms. Ask any German prisoner why his fellow countrymen annihilated 6 million innocent people, and he will reply quite simply, why, they were Jews. That's not the only time this symbolic figure appeared in that propaganda newspaper published for Anglo-Saxon readers. It was repeated in the issues of January 4th and March 15th, 1945. We read there, "The world now knows that Germany has killed 6 million Jews." Those articles were rediscovered by the German historian Dr. Joachim Hofmann, who has reproduced them in the appendix to his 2001 book, Stalin's War of Extermination. See its front cover here on the right. Here the same question comes to mind. How could Ehrenberg know that 6 million had been killed before even a single Allied soldier had set foot onto German soil? In fact, Ehrenberg knew about those 6 million already much earlier. English newspapers were announcing in November of 1944 that Ehrenberg was about to publish a book on claimed German atrocities. Here is a press release by the United Press as published in the Youngstown Vindicator on November 27, 1944, where we read about, quote, "the German massacre of approximately 6 million European Jews," and down below we read that somewhat misspelled main editor of that book, Ilya Ehrenberg. Now, considering that writing a book takes months, that 6 million figure must have been around already well before November 1944. This book actually didn't get published in the Soviet Union at that time, probably because Stalin didn't want to emphasize the Jews' role as victims of the Germans. It appeared only many years after the war. Here is an edition that can currently be bought on Amazon, again with Ehrenberg as the main editor. That the 6 million figure is indeed older than November 1944 can be gleaned from the next writer, Rabbi Chaim Weissmandl, who became known for his efforts to save the Jews of Slovakia from what he assumed would be certain extermination. Wikipedia writes about him, quote, "largely by bribing diplomats, Weissmandl was able to smuggle letters or telegrams to people he hoped would help save the Jews of Europe, alerting them to the progressive Nazi destruction of European Jewry. It is known that he managed to send letters to Winston Churchill and Franklin D. Roosevelt, and he entrusted a diplomat to deliver a letter to the Vatican for Pope Pius XII. One of the most famous letters he wrote is widely quoted here, for instance by the Jewish Virtual Library. It stems from May 16, 1944, and was allegedly written while Weissmandl was hiding in a cave in Poland. If we scroll further down on their webpage on this letter, we read there, quote, "Why are you, fellow Jews and government ministers, in all the free countries being silent about this slaughter, in which some 6 million Jews have been murdered thus far, and in which tens of thousands are now being murdered every day?" Again, we should ask, how could this cave dweller know this? Weissmandl is such a big figure in the struggle to save Jews during the war that there exists even a dedicated book on him. Here, the book's page on Amazon. One of the first mainstream authors referring to Weissmandl was the Holocaust historian Dr. Davidovich, shown to the right, in her 1975 book, The War Against the Jews. Not even May 1944 is the end of our 6 million journey through time. Let's leap backward a year. May 15, 1943. The material shown here is taken from an 11-minute documentary on YouTube named How Do We Know That 6 Million Jews Died in the Holocaust?, which has some additional interesting material along the same lines as the present documentary. You might want to watch it too. The first item of interest is an article in the Australian newspaper, The Advertiser, dated May 15, 1943. It mentions, quote, the possibility of the complete wiping out of 6 million Jews. So this article does not claim that 6 million have already been murdered, but that there is a chance that this will be done by the barbarian Hun. The next entry is from the Canadian Jewish Review from just a day earlier. Let's watch this brief video clip as it moves across that paper. Down here it states, quote, 2 millions of Jews have already been done to death. 6 million in mid-Europe are sentenced to die. So here as well, they predict that at the end of the war, 6 million might be the total death toll. Our third quote is from the Cumberland Evening Times, from Cumberland, Maryland. It is from March 20th, 1943, and tells the reader what the Nazis were in the process of doing. Quote, the Nazis set out in the beginning to destroy whole peoples. They expected to obliterate from the earth not less than 6 million Jews as a beginning. My last quote is from the New York Times of March 10, 1943, where we read in a similar fashion that 2 million Jews have already been killed in Europe. And further down we read that 4 million left to kill are being killed according to plan. One month earlier still, America's Magazine, with the largest amount of readers, Reader's Digest, has a very interesting article, which I want to briefly highlight here by showing an excerpt from the 9th episode of the excellent 4.5-hour documentary, One Third of the Holocaust, which you can find on YouTube.
We might find the answer in Reader's Digest, of all places. In February 1943, the usual millions of copies were dropped in rural, small town, and suburban mailboxes all over the United States. You get an idea of what the magazine was like by a sampling of the article titles such as Vivas for Jorge Washington and Even Soda Pop Goes to War. At the time, Reader's Digest had the highest circulation of any magazine in the world. The issue had an article called Remember Us. It said on page 107 that by the end of the war, the Jews of Europe would be reduced from a minority to a phantom. In other words, there would be hardly any left. The author puts out a number. 6 million. That's quite a prediction considering this is in the middle of the war and that the main chambers at Auschwitz were still under construction. In Hilberg's book on page 885, we see that at the time, the main chambers at Auschwitz hadn't even been finished being built. So was the writer an investigative reporter stationed in Europe with access to good information, or a high-up government official? Actually, the writer was a Jewish Hollywood scriptwriter named Ben Hecht. His internet movie database entry is huge. This story in Reader's Digest brought the Holocaust story to the heartland of America for the first time.
Going back yet another year, let's turn to America's most prestigious newspaper, the New York Times. On December 13th of that year, this paper published an article on statements made by several rabbis throughout New York. Right in the middle of that article is the section of interest. It says there, quote, authenticated reports point to 2 million Jews who have already been slain by all manner of satanic barbarism, and plans for the total extermination of all Jews upon whom the Nazis can lay their hands. The slaughter of a third of the Jewish population in Hitler's domain and the threatened slaughter of all is a Holocaust without parallel. Note the word Holocaust here. A week later, the New York Times reported that in addition to the 2 million already murdered, another 5 million were in danger of extermination. During the war years, the New York Times published a number of rather revealing articles on this and closely related issues, which were first analyzed by Dr. Butz in his 1976 book, The Hoax of the 20th Century, here shown in its currently available fourth edition of 2015, which is volume 7 of the Holocaust Handbook series. Needless to say, that wasn't the end of it either. Here is an article from the Palm Beach Post of June 25, 1940, the day France surrendered to the German Wehrmacht. It is headlined, "Doom of European Jews is seen if Hitler wins," which is meant to stir up the world against Hitler in order to prevent peace to be concluded at reasonable terms, which Germany was offering at that point. The chairman of the World Jewish Congress, Nahum Goldman, is quoted as having said that 6 million Jews in Europe are doomed to destruction in case the world makes peace with Hitler. How could Goldman know that? And why would that be so in the first place, as it was the continuation of the war rather than its early termination, which is said to have triggered the Holocaust? But again, discussing this would get us off topic, so we won't go there. The next item is from January 1939, almost 9 months before the outbreak of the war. It reports, among other things, that the Czech politician Masaryk had to say. Masaryk was a disgruntled politician who couldn't stand seeing his country, the former Czechoslovakia, falling apart due to constant conflict between its various ethnic groups. He blamed that conflict on Germany and was looking for allies in his propaganda efforts against Germany, here among American Jewish lobby groups. But that's not why I bring it up. If we scroll down on this lengthy article, we find an interesting passage toward the end where a rabbi is quoted. He has his own agenda, and that is trying to get support for Jewish emigration from Europe. In that context, he said that it would be impossible to evacuate 6 million Jews. Again, the mystical figure. A little later, a certain Dr. Chaim Weizmann is mentioned as being supportive of this migration effort. Here is his liking. We will encounter him next in our journey back in time. We are now in 1936. At that time, the so-called Peel Commission, formed by the British government, was investigating the causes of Arab unrest in Palestine, which at that time was under British control. In that context, Jewish leaders were also heard, some of which advocated the formation of a Jewish autonomous area in Palestine, or even an independent state. Here you can see a map that shows how the country that today forms Israel would have been divided up according to one suggestion being discussed back then. The 1937 Peel Commission report concluded as follows. Partition offers a possibility of finding a way through the difficulties, a possibility of obtaining a final solution of the Jewish problem, which does justice to the rights and aspirations of both the Arabs and the Jews, and discharges the obligations undertaken towards them 20 years ago to the fullest extent that is practicable in the circumstances of the present time. Nothing came of it back then, though, as we know today. However, what is interesting in our present context is the testimony of one witness who testified in 1936 during the commission's hearing, Dr. Chaim Weizmann. Here is the article from the London Times of November 23, 1936, which reports about Weizmann's testimony. I put a red box around what interests us here and enlarged it. He spoke of 6 million unwanted unfortunates in Eastern Europe that were condemned to be penned up in places where they could not live. Even in Western Europe, they were now threatened. Second was the world problem created by the presence of these 6 million people without a future, whose condition was a threat to Europe. A certificate permitting emigration to Palestine was regarded as a certificate of freedom. So here the future first president of the State of Israel lets the cat out of the bag. Jewish leaders were advocating a Zionist agenda, and 6 million suffering Jews were a convenient argument for this. Again, we won't discuss here whether Weizmann's claims are accurate. We only note that he used the magical figure. Let's look into two media reports during the first years of Hitler's reign. The first is from the newspaper of record, the New York Times, of September 8, 1935. This article is actually mainly about Jews in Poland, but it features what we are looking for. I quote, The first conference of the Federation of Polish Jews was being attended by 60 delegates from 18 countries representing 6 million Jews, although there is nothing in it about suffering Jews. The next media item sure is. It is from March 29, 1939, and addresses claimed persecutions of Jews in Germany. It says that the Joint Distribution Committee is now active in relief and reconstruction work in Eastern Europe, where 6 million Jews are involved. The work there is done through the office in Berlin. This brings up a topic which brings us to the second part of this presentation, because the Joint Distribution Committee mentioned here has been involved in Jewish relief activities for many years before Hitler came to power. 6 million Jews mentioned before Hitler came to power. At this point, we'll stop our journey back in time and do our journey chronologically. We start with looking into Jewish lobbying activities prior to the First World War. Then we will briefly look into what was going on during that First World conflagration, after which we will investigate Jewish fundraising campaigns between the world wars. Finally, we will follow the money to see what is really going on. We start by going back to the year when the magical number was mentioned for the first time. It was in the year 1850, in a book published by a Christian society trying to make Jews convert to Christianity. On page 216 of this book, we find some statistical numbers on religious affiliations of mankind during that era. Here it is, enlarged with the magical number underlined, claiming that among the billion people living on the planet, 6 million were Jews. The next occurrence we have located stems from the year 1866 in yet another Christian publication, which repeats the number from 1850 on its page 677. Probably in lack of any reliable demographic data, the number keeps popping up elsewhere, for instance, in the New York Times of September 12, 1869, where we read under the headline, Sunday Notes, with reference to a new Jewish weekly that there are now living about 6 million Israelites, nearly one half of whom live in Europe. This is repeated again in the same newspaper on October 31st of that same year under the headline Religious Intelligence. 20 years later in a New York Times article of February 10, 1889, which actually asked the question, how many Jews are there, the number still hadn't changed. This makes me suspect that nobody was actually counting the Jews. They were just copying that figure from whoever wrote it first, since it was a round, sexy number. Before rushing ahead, let's take a step backward in time. On March 13, 1881, the Russian Tsar Alexander II was assassinated by political radicals. At the right, you can see a portrait of him, and below, a painting showing an artist's take on the scene when that assassination actually happened in Petersburg. Since many political radicals in Russia were Jewish, pogroms against Jews flared up in Russia, lasting for more than a year. Although the Tsar's government didn't seem to have contributed to them, they were accused of not doing enough to put a stop to it. Here is the cover of a book which tells the grim story of that year. The New York Times reported on those pogroms, for instance, in a long article on January 28, 1882, with the headline, Russian Jewish Horrors, a 9 months record of rape, murder, and outrage, which summarized the events of the prior 9 months. On April 22, 1882, in an article headlined, Russia and the Jews, the same newspaper even used a buzzword in connection with the Russian pogroms, annihilation. The next Tsar, Alexander III, was massively opposed to political reforms and wanted to turn the clock back, while the world around him expected Russia to become more liberal. In particular, he had an axe to grind with the Jews, as they were the ones pushing most ardently for liberalization. Hence, in May 1882, Tsar Alexander III tightened residential and professional limits for the Jews in Russia. Several towns and provinces subsequently expelled their Jews, erroneously thinking that the Tsar had issued a ukase expelling them from Russia altogether. As a result, Jews started emigrating from Russia by the thousands. The New York Times was reporting about this ongoing persecution of Jews in Russia, peaking in 1891 with numerous articles. The first one appeared on January 26, where it said, Russia's population of 5 million to 6 million Jews. And elsewhere, about 6 million persecuted and miserable wretches. The Times reporting on Jews in Russia culminated in a series of 15 articles by a certain Harold Frederick, stretching from early September to late December 1891. Almost all of them were printed on the front page. The first was titled Russia's War on the Jews, while all the other subsequent 14 articles were titled An Indictment of Russia. The second sequel of this series of September 12th gave as the total number of Jews living in Russia again an estimate of 6 million. And now here they come, all 15 of them. I won't go into any details again because we're not concerned with the underlying claimed or actual historical events, but rather with the origin of that magical number. I only want to highlight here that second sequel, which at the bottom of the first column says about the number of Jews living in Russia. Quote, a total of 6 million is most nearly correct. This number was repeated in a New York Times article headlined Russia and Religious Liberty on March 15, 1896. Here it is underlined in red. During the reign of Tsar Alexander III, Russia wanted to get rid of its Jews, but no country would accept them. With no place to go, Jewish lobby groups were looking for a way out. That was a situation which would repeat itself some 50 years later in Germany, by the way. In 1897, Theodor Herzl published his now famous book, Der Judenstaat, The Jewish State, which gave the Zionist movement a tremendous boost. Jewish media and organizations increasingly lobbied for the emigration of Jews to Palestine and for the resurrection of Israel. For example, as the New York Times reports on June 11, 1900, during a Zionists' mass meeting in New York, Rabbi Stephen Weiss said, "There are 6 million living, bleeding, suffering arguments in favor of Zionism." Although Russia started implementing serious liberal reforms with the succession of Tsar Nicholas II to the throne in 1894, Russia wasn't coming to rest. On April 19th through the 21st in 1903, an anti-Jewish pogrom occurred in the Russian town of Kishinev. On May 16th, the New York Times reported about the event, and way down toward the lower end of this long article we read, quote, "We charge the Russian government with responsibility of the Kishinev massacre. We say it is steeped to the eye in the guilt of this Holocaust." Yep, there it is, a Holocaust. But that's not all. Further below we read, quote, "So long as a civilized government brands 5 million people as perilous pest which must be slowly annihilated, so long its baser subjects will think themselves justified in accelerating the process of extermination with knives, axes, and hatchets." So, annihilation, extermination, and a Holocaust. It's all there. The article's only deficit is that it missed the magical figure by a million. In the same vein, the New York Times wrote on May 20th of that same year, again with reference to the Kishinev massacre, quote, "This barbaric Holocaust," end quote. The spell was broken. A fashionable word had been minted, the Holocaust. On November 10, 1905, the New York Times used the buzzword again. The background of this was the failed attempt to overthrow the Tsar. During that aborted revolution, political radicals, mostly socialists and communists, failed to do what they would succeed in doing 12 years later. As before, this attempted revolution was again fueled by a disproportionate number of Jewish radicals and with a lot of Jewish support, even from abroad. The New York Times reported this attempted putsch rather favorably. But when things went bad for the revolutionaries, retaliatory excesses against Jews were again on the rise, resulting in this renewed accusation of a Holocaust by the New York Times. 3 days later, on November 13th, we read the following in the New York Times on page 1. Jews are being exterminated. And then on page 4, in an article denouncing the Russian Orthodox Church for its alleged responsibility in those pogroms, the Times uses the word Holocaust again with reference to the Kishinev massacre. It is even claimed that the Russian Church had, quote, repeatedly declared that the Jew must be either converted or exterminated. Again, we won't check whether that's true. We are only interested in the history of the magical number, and while we're at it, if we stumble over similar buzzwords, I'll present them here too. As we have seen during the previous slide, as we approach the First World War, things are heating up and Jewish lobby groups are pushing for a Jewish homeland. Here is an article in the New York Times from October 20, 1904, pipe dreaming about Britain handing over to Jews some colony in Africa. England's offer of land in South Africa, says the subtitle, and further below, the promised land has shifted to East Africa. But what we're after can be found further below. The reason for Jews trying to find some homeland, the suppressed 6 million Jews in Russia. I mentioned before that the New York Times was supportive of the aborted Russian Revolution of 1905. Here is an article from January 29, 1905, proving the point. It was written in the wake of civil unrest, which eventually led to that failed putsch. A Jewish preacher is quoted saying that, quote, a free and a happy Russia with its 6 million Jews would possibly mean the end of Zionism. In other words, if a revolution would liberate Russia, Jews would get lucky and wouldn't have to leave Russia. After the failed 1905 revolution in Russia, the New York Times published more reports on 6 million suffering Jews. Here are some examples. Reporting about the resignation of a top official of the Russian Orthodox Church, we read on November 1, 1905, quote, from 1890 to 1902, he caused 6 million Jews to be expelled from Russia. Now, if that were so, there wouldn't have been any Jews left in Russia afterwards, but be that as it may, right now we're only interested in tracking that symbolic figure here. On March 25, 1906, we read in the newspaper of record that, quote, starting reports of the condition and future of Russia's 6 million Jews indicate that, quote, the Russian government's studied policy for the solution of the Jewish question is systematic and murderous extermination. Does that rhetoric sound familiar? Almost 5 years later, in an article from March 13, 1910 about Jews fleeing from Russia, we read in the same newspaper again that magical number of Jews suffering in Russia. And again on April 11, 1910, on the sad plight of the Russian Jews, where, quote, 6 million souls are subject to systematic, relentless, quiet grinding down, whatever that means. October 31st, 1911, Christian Church's plea for the Jews, and the New York Times reports in the middle column of that article about a resolution passed where we read that, quote, the 6 million Jews of Russia are singled out for systematic oppression and for persecution by due process of law. My last pre-World War I example from the New York Times is from December 10th, 1911. This is a huge full-page article dedicated to the oppressed Jews in Russia. The rightmost column has the buzzwords we are looking for at the very bottom in the red box shown here, which I magnify. Now, the New York Times sure wasn't the only media outlet propagating that 6 million Jews were being persecuted and exterminated by Russia, but it was the most prominent and prestigious source to do so. In a similar vein, one of the most prestigious publications of American Jewry, the American Jewish Yearbook, wrote on page 308 of its edition covering the years 1911 to 1912, quote, the position of our Jewish co-religionists in Russia grows increasingly deplorable. And further down, quote, Russia has since 1890 adopted a deliberate plan to expel or exterminate 6 million of its people. This frenzy was jacked up to near fever pitch once the Great War had broken out. Here are some quotes from the New York Times published during that conflict. On December 1914, we read about, quote, the plight of more than 6 million Jews who live within the war zone. On January 14, 1915, in support of a fundraising campaign, we are told that, quote, more than 6 million Jews are in the very heart of the war zone. On February 28, 1916, again in connection with the attempt to raise funds, the Times reports that, quote, nearly 6 million Jews are ruined. Almost at the end of the war, on October 18, 1918, in an attempt to get $1 billion from American donors in support of whatever was happening in Russia back then, I think they had a quote-unquote successful revolution there for a change. The Times reported in its subtitle that 6 million souls will need help, without saying what kinds of souls they are. But further down, this is then spelled out, 6 million Jews need help. In the middle of the First World War, the American Jewish Committee published a booklet which played a major role in shaping public opinion in the U.S. as to the situation of Jews in Russia, because 25,000 free copies of this booklet were sent to leaders of U.S. society and molders of public opinion, including President Wilson, members of the presidential cabinet and Congress, and the media. The language used in this book was subsequently reused extensively by other sources, such as the New York Times. The general theme of this publication was that Jews in Eastern Europe experienced a unique suffering which was not experienced by any other group of people. The booklet claimed that Jews were uniquely denied elementary rights and that they were victims of government-sponsored persecution. What interests us here are buzzwords like 6 million and extermination. On pages 12, it's claimed that Russia has a campaign of extermination running against the Jews. On page 19, it talks about 6 million Jews living in squalor and misery. On page 20, it states that there are 6 million Jews in Russia. And further below, that they live like prison inmates. On page 29, we have again the 6 million Russian Jews. On page 47, it states that 6 million Russian Jews ought to be loyal to their country, and in similar vein on page 60. And finally, on page 66, claiming that nearly half of these 6 million Jews are now without means of support. Roughly a year after the end of World War I, an article appeared in the Jewish periodical The American Hebrew with the headline, "The Crucifixion of Jews Must Stop." It contains so many buzzwords that it can rightly be called the pinnacle of pre-World War II Holocaust propaganda. We read here, quote, "From across the sea, 6 million men and women call us for help." A little further down, that magical number is repeated. We read that, quote, 6 million human beings are being whirled toward the grave, and that, quote, 6 million men and women are dying. The next paragraph even says, quote, "In this threatened Holocaust of human life." And in the next column, it speaks about, quote, 6 million famished men and women, 6 million men and women are dying. Finally, we read that, quote, "Because of this war for democracy, 6 million Jewish men and women are starving across the ocean." Never mind that in this so-called war for democracy, the Tsarist monarchy fought alongside the British constitutional monarchy against the constitutional monarchies of Germany and Austria. Democracy had nothing to do with it. But again, we're not concerned with historical facts here outside of tracking down that symbolic figure, so I'll leave it at that. As already mentioned before, Jewish organizations started raising huge amounts of money in order to support the Jews in Russia. If we want to understand what was going on at that time, we need a brief summary of those events. Since the communist push in late 1918, a brutal civil war was raging in Russia. The communist Reds were opposed by the counter-revolutionary Whites, who were units mostly loyal to the monarchy. Ethnic Jews, most of whom had been the most ardent enemies of the Tsarist system for decades for understandable reasons, dominated many of the leading ranks of the Reds. Consequently, anti-Jewish feelings among the Whites and their supporters grew immensely. The result of this were more Jewish pogroms, but this time the Jews were willing to fight back. For example, in an article of September 18, 1919, the New York Times reported on massacres against Jews committed by anti-Semitic gangs and by counter-revolutionary units. According to the article, 127,000 Jews had already been killed in pogroms, and all 6 million were threatened to be next. Further down, it calls these pogroms massacres. And toward the end, it states, quote, "This fact that the population of 6 million souls in Ukraine and in Poland have received notice through action and by word that they are going to be completely exterminated." On December 20, 1922, the New York Times reported with pride how Jews had formed their own militia in the young Soviet Union to fight against anti-Jewish gangs and counter-revolutionary insurgents in order to protect, quote, "the lives and interests of 5 million of their race living in Russia." At that time, when the Soviets had won the Civil War, such a militia army was possible only with the Soviet government's support, or at least tacit condoning. There is another 22-minute long video on YouTube titled 6 Million Jews, 1915 to 1938, at that address given here, which I can highly recommend. It shows a number of original newspapers of that time period and briefly highlights similar buzzwords as we are tracking here. The disturbing question that this raises is, were Jewish groups in the U.S. supporting the communist revolution? Fact is that, by 1921, Jewish pressure groups in the U.S. feared a collapse of communist Russia, as they expected this to lead to a gargantuan pogrom against the Jews in Russia. A New York Times article of July 20, 1921, gets that point across already in the subtitle, which states that massacres are threatened should the power of the Soviet regime wane. We read there, quote, "Russia's 6 million Jews are facing extermination by massacre. As the famine is spreading, the counter-revolutionary movement is gaining and the Soviets' control is waning." The fundraising campaigns by Jewish lobby groups in the U.S. were therefore focused not only on helping destitute Jews, but also on pressuring the U.S. government to intervene. One might also wonder where the Jews in Russia got the means to organize and arm an army of 500,000 Jewish soldiers. Interestingly, the article was copied from the Chicago Daily Tribune, which, however, printed this article on the same date with a misleading headline, trying to imply that the Jews were fleeing from the communists, although the article states clearly that they only feared a defeat of the Reds during that Revolutionary War. Let's now quickly go through a number of ads and articles dealing with the fundraising campaigns initiated by Jewish organizations in the U.S. after World War I, with the aim of supporting Jews and their various projects in Europe and the Soviet Union, whatever those projects might have been. My first example is an article in the New York Times of November 12, 1919, which talks about 6 million starving Jews in Europe and about $30 million which have already been spent to help them. Here is another one from April 21, 1920. Scrolling down, we find, well, this time only 5 million starving Jews in Europe. This is an ad published in the New York Times on May 1st of that same year. It's by the Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, and they are asking for big dollars to make sure that 6 million lives are no longer at stake. This ad by the JDC is from 2 days later, imploring to save the lives of 6 million Jews by handing over the money. The previous ad was accompanied by an editorial article talking about a catastrophe taking place in Russia and neighboring countries, but again missing the mark by a million as it talks only about 5 million starving Jews. But we're not picky. Two days later, yet another ad with the same spiel by the JDC. And in the same edition, 10 pages on, we find this ad also from the JDC. Again, 2 days later, they're at it again. this time with an article deploring the 6 million Jewish war sufferers in Eastern Europe and asking for money. The campaign lost some of its momentum later that year, but it was rekindled in 1926. For instance, with an ad like this published in the New York Times on April 21, 1926. It doesn't mention 6 million suffering Jews in that ad, only that, quote, millions of Jews, in fact, quote, a whole people is dying. But they actually ask for $6 million for a change instead. This one is from late 1926 and talks about 5 million suffering Jews, stating that the JDC has so far sent some $62 million to Jewish sufferers in Europe, which were, quote, distributed among those 5 million destitute Jews, but that more was needed. Not that all this fundraising helped much, because after almost 15 years of more or less uninterrupted fundraising, 6 million Jews were still dying in Eastern Europe, as the Montreal Gazette claimed on December 29, 1931. So the JDC wanted some $2.5 million more dollars. You get the picture. Let us now focus on what happened with all that money. Don Hedesheimer spends quite some time tracking down those millions of dollars, which today would be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. This graphic shows how much the Jewish Joint Distribution Committee collected from its inception in late 1914 until 1934. That chart was taken from a book published in 1935 by the Jewish billionaire banker Felix Warburg. All in all, the JTC raised some $77 million throughout those years. While most of the funds raised in the war and immediate post-war years were spent mostly on helping people in need, later years saw a shift toward a larger portion of Reconstruction activities. The Joint Distribution Committee was and still is to this day a Jewish organization which was represented by some of the most influential and rich individuals on the planet, like Louis D. Brandeis, an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court from 1916 to 1939, Henry Morgenthau, senior U.S. Ambassador to the Ottoman Empire during the First World War, and father of Henry Morgenthau, Jr., the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury during the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt, U.S. banker Jacob H. Schiff, and Cyrus L. Sulzberger, a leading figure in many U.S. Jewish organizations, and the already mentioned Felix Warburg. This image here shows some of these celebrities as published in the book mentioned on the right. But that's not the whole story. Fact is that tens of millions of these dollars raised did not just serve emergency relief and reconstruction activities, as the JDC claimed in that chart just shown. An article in the New York Times of September 7, 1927, accused members of the JDC of misappropriating millions of these donations for their own needs. As much as 40%, it was claimed, may have, quote, disappeared in the manipulations by the bankers on the subject of exchange. No formal investigation was ever launched, though, so we don't know for sure what exactly happened. Fact is that in addition to the above-mentioned projects, those millions of U.S. dollars were also used to support Jewish communist agricultural settlements throughout the Soviet Union. They moreover served, quote, general improvements, electrification of villages, irrigation, water supply, and other projects. Throughout Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, as the JDC itself admitted in a 1939 book with the title 25 Years of American Aid to Jews Overseas. A record of the Joint Distribution Committee. In another JDC book published in 1953, we find this remarkable admission, quote, without the full cooperation of the Russian government, these tasks could not have been accomplished. In other words, the Soviet Union welcomed this massive influx of U.S. capital meant to stabilize the lives of Russian Jews, since it also helped stabilize this revolutionary regime to a small degree. As hinted at before, it would also not be surprising to find out that some of the funds were used to support the Jewish militias fighting alongside the Red Army during the Revolutionary Civil War in the early 1920s. And that's only regarding funds that were raised and transferred to the Soviet Union through official channels. But again, that's not the focus of this presentation. In the last part of this presentation, we will approach our topic in a broader, more general way. For this purpose, I have tapped into three databases which can be accessed online. First, we have the Library of Congress search engine of historic American newspapers, which featured digitized U.S. newspapers from 1836 to 1922. I have searched it for the terms 6 million Jews, both written out and as a number. The first case I have found 71 results, and in the second, 198. Curious as I was, I also searched the database for 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 million. The results are given in parentheses, so there is no particular predominance for 6 million. However, when looking up the actual newspaper articles, it turns out that only the entries of 7, 6, and 5 million are predominantly about claims of suffering Jews or Jews in danger of being exterminated, with a focus on 5 and 6 million. Lower figures are usually about some mundane issue, like how many Jews live in New York or in the U.S., or some other country, for instance. Here are three examples of entries I have found using this database which meet our criteria. I will just scroll through them without boring you with even more details. If you want to read it, just pause this video. I have done the same kind of search on the New York Times database at the address given, and for editions spanning from 1851 to 1939. This results in only 4 entries for 6 million Jews, with the number written out, and 16 entries with the actual number. Results for other round million figures are again listed in parentheses, where the same observation applies as mentioned before. Here are three examples of the New York Times writing actually about 7 million suffering, starving, dying Jews. Stop the video to read details if you wish. I've also searched the database of the Chicago Tribune, but the results there are rather meager. After all, the New York Times was owned and run by Jews, whereas the Chicago Tribune was not. This may account for the difference, but the Chicago Daily Tribune, as it was called back then, was not immune to the 6 million propaganda either, as this example of 1919 shows, which states that, quote, more than 6 million Jews are suffering. Now, if you think I have presented a lot of material published prior to the end of the Second World War which refers to 6 million suffering and dying Jews, think again. Because there is more, and the most comprehensive list I've seen so far, spanning from years 1990 to the end of World War II with currently 278 entries, can be found on the internet address listed here. Don't worry, we won't get into any of them here. I'll just let some of the first entries scroll through to give you an impression. If you are interested in the entire list, you can get there also by simply entering the Google shortcut goo.gl/H8AUQJ. Now, if you are trying to convince a skeptic, this list might not do the trick, because anyone can make up such a list. In that case, you'd have to present not just the source information, but the reproductions of the actual newspaper articles. And guess what? That's been done by a very diligent researcher as well. It has been published as an ebook with the title 6 Million Open Gates, whose cover is shown here. It can be downloaded free of charge at the address given. If that's too much to type, just use the Google shortcut. This book contains reproductions of 240 media items between 1900 and late 1945. I'm showing here only the first 21 entries. The author of this book has gone to great lengths and huge expenses to put this work together. So in case you need to see the actual article to believe it, just grab an electronic copy of that book. And make no mistake, this list is still not complete. Let's take a more scientific, statistical approach to the matter at hand. The world's largest internet search engine, Google, has posted millions of books online. This database can be used to find out how often a certain term occurs in books associated with a certain date, usually the date of publication. Here is a graph showing the result for the term 6 million Jews. I have also done the same search for the same term in the second most common media language, which is German. The result for 6 Millionen Juden are shown in red. Now let's make an overlay. The tendency in both languages is similar, but the peaks are more pronounced in the German, maybe because there is less data. Anyway, we see here a first rise of that figure with ongoing pogroms in Russia under Tsar Alexander III, then a steep rise starting just prior to the First World War, with a peak during the fundraising campaign of the early 1920s, and another less pronounced one during the campaign's second phase in the mid and late 1920s. Next, we have a slight rise during the early years of Nazi Germany, a further slow rise during the first years of the Second World War, with an extreme rise after the outbreak of the German-Soviet War in mid-1941. The curve hits a maximum in the mid and late 1940s around the Nuremberg tribunals and its legal and media aftermaths. Then we have another sharp peak around the 1961 Eichmann trial in Jerusalem, with a slight decrease in the Anglo-Saxon world but a more pronounced one in the German media sphere, probably because the Germans weren't quite in tune with the new zeitgeist yet. The last rise of the curve indicates that 6 million has turned into a household term, but the later decrease is probably merely due to newer books being underrepresented in Google's database due to copyright protection issues. Let's summarize what we've learned. The term 6 million Jews could be found in Anglo-Saxon media reports ever since the world's Jewish population had reached roughly 6 million in the mid-1800s. The anti-Jewish pogroms and legal measures in Russia after the assassination of Tsar Alexander II in 1881 made 6 million Jews a buzzword. Terms like extermination and Holocaust made their first appearance in this context at the dawn of the 20th century. During the aborted communist revolution of 1905, these words were even used together with an alleged solution of the Jewish question as a policy of murderous extermination. The First World War, with its subsequent Russian/communist revolution, which was very popular among many Jews both in Russia and abroad, resulted in further hardship for the Jews in Russia. This, in turn, led to a steep increase in the use of these buzzwords. Fundraising campaigns in the U.S. for Jews in Eastern Europe kept those terms in the media during the early and mid-1920s. The rise of National Socialism in Germany steadily reinvigorated the use of these terms from the very beginning of the Third Reich. We conclude, therefore, that we have known since the 1880s that 6 million Jews have been threatened more or less continuously with extermination in a Holocaust. So what, you may ask? What is this supposed to prove, if anything? Well, here are some tough questions. In 1882, was there a struggle for the annihilation of Jews? In 1903, did the Russian government decide that Jews must be annihilated so that they underwent a process of extermination in this barbaric Holocaust? In 1905, was there a Holocaust in which Jews must be exterminated? In 1906, was the Russian government's policy to solve the Jewish question by way of murderous extermination? In 1911, had Russia adopted a plan to exterminate 6 million Jews? In 1915, was there a Russian campaign of extermination against the Jews? In 1919, were 6 million Jews dying in this threatened Holocaust? Were 6 million Jewish souls going to be completely exterminated? In 1920, was it necessary to save 6 million Jews from extermination? In 1921, were Russia's 6 million Jews facing extermination by massacre? In 1926, was the whole Jewish people dying? To ask these questions in such a condensed form means to answer them. Because what we are dealing with here was exaggeration and hyperbole. Fact is that prior to the Communist Revolution, Holocaust and extermination claims were exaggerations used to lobby for facilitation of Jewish immigration to the U.S. and to other countries, creation of a Jewish national homeland, and regime change in Russia. Once that regime change had been accomplished in Russia at the end of World War I, Holocaust and extermination claims didn't cease, but rather continued. This time, these exaggerations were used to raise funds meant to assist Jewish communities in Eastern Europe, to prevent success of the Tsarist counter-revolution, and thus to effectively stabilize the fledgling communist regime in Russia. The advent of the Third Reich led to the repetition of some of the patterns. Holocaust and extermination claims were exaggerated, at least until the outbreak of the German-Soviet War, which was by its very nature a counter-revolutionary war. These exaggerations were again used to lobby for facilitation of Jewish immigration to the U.S. and to other countries. Creation of a Jewish national homeland in Palestine, and finally, regime change in Germany. We all know the outcome of that struggle. Okay, so Holocaust, extermination, 6 million Jewish victims, and a murderous solution to the Jewish question, all these are recycled terms, so to say. But what about gas chambers? They surely must be genuinely linked to the Third Reich, right? Well, the truth is, no. On March 22, 1916, during the worst part of the First World War for Britain, the traditionally anti-German newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, published an article with the title, Atrocities in Serbia. In this subtitle, it mentions 700,000 victims. Now, all historians, without exception, agree today that this news report was false atrocity propaganda. But let's read it. It says, quote, according to reliable information, the victims of the Austrians and Bulgarians exceeded 700,000. Whole districts with towns and villages have been depopulated by massacres. Women, children, and old men were shut up in the churches by the Austrians and either stabbed with the bayonet or suffocated by means of asphyxiating gas. In one church in Belgrade, 3,000 women, children, and old men were thus suffocated. End quote. Okay, so that was atrocity propaganda, a lie designed to stir up the war-weary British public so they would keep up the fight against their German brothers who were offering peace since 1915. Compare the previous article with this one, though, which was again published by the rapidly anti-German Daily Telegraph, this one on June 25, 1942. Britain was again embroiled in a fratricidal war against their German brethren, but this time the 700,000 victims are already announced in the main title, and the gas chambers have become mobile. Also, by moving up from the lower half of the article to the subtitle, we read here, quote, more than 700,000 Polish Jews have been slaughtered by the Germans in the greatest massacre in the world's history. Now, this time this news report was the whole and unembellished, indubitable truth. And you better believe it, because doubting this can get you prison terms of up to 10 years in Austria, 5 years in Germany, Russia, and Israel, 3 years in Italy, Switzerland, Poland, and Hungary, and lower prison terms in many more countries. This is actually the only claimed event in the history of mankind that has ever been protected from critical investigation by penal law. But again, that's not the subject of this presentation, so be that as it may. Fact is that with Germany's collapse in 1945, the nightmarish gas chambers used to kill most of the 6 million Jews who fell victim to the Holocaust, that is to say, the Nazis' solution to the Jewish question by means of murderous extermination. Note that any resemblance of the terms used here with those used during past events is purely coincidental. These gas chambers were a matter of the past, gone for good, done. Wrong again. False war propaganda struck again in 1991 when the world was gearing up to wage a war against Saddam Hitler. Saddam Hussein. During that first U.S.-led war against Iraq, the Jewish press had this unobtrusive headline on the front page of its issue dated February 21, 1991. I'm not going to analyze it here. The Simon Wiesenthal Center jumped on that same bandwagon with the spring 1991 issue of their periodical Response. Here is the title page of that infamous edition where we read, quote, Germans produce Zyklon B in Iraq, end quote. They even show a German-made gas chamber allegedly planned to be used on the Jews of Israel should Saddam ever make it there. Again, everybody agrees today that this was just another case of wartime hysteria, of false atrocity propaganda. But it did the trick to whip the world into a war of extermination against the nation of Iraq, if I may borrow that term. Does anyone care what the truth was? So at the end of this presentation, let's pose that initial question again. Since when do we know that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust? To answer this question, we need to know two things. First, which 6 million are we talking about? And second, which Holocaust? Thank you for taking the time to watch this presentation. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something about the mendacity of our mass media when it comes to stirring up the world's nations into waging war and causing violent civil unrest, revolution, and other means of more or less violent forms of regime change. And if you would like to read the book upon which this presentation is based, you can find it on Amazon or anywhere else books can be bought, or go to www.holocausthandbooks.com for more information.